Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to From the Touchline in Seattle. I'm Todd Stauber, and I'm here with Aaron Heinzen.
Hey!
Oh, man, he sounds good this morning. It is a beautiful day in Seattle, and that's good because we got a lot going on here in the world of soccer, and we are going to a little preview of what we have coming. Legal analyst John Wilson is coming on to talk about FIFA and the disaster that they are. We have Seattle Reign head coach, former Arsenal women head coach, Laura Harvey, coming on to talk Women's World Cup. Excited to have her on the air, Hanzo.
Absolutely. That's big time.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, then we're going to bring on Washington boys and former Western Washington University stars Oscar Jimenez and Gibson Bardsley. They're in town with the Tulsa Roughnecks as they face Seattle Sounders 2 tonight down at Starfire.
Should be a good matchup.
Yeah, good matchup, and those guys are going to be on to talk about that. We got MLS, and of course we have the Champions League final tomorrow. We can't leave that out.
No, we can't. Champions League final.
We're going to get going. Let's talk FIFA, and there's quite a bit to talk about here. Sepp Blatter, after claiming to the world that he was the president of everyone last Friday when he ceremoniously won back his fifth term as president of FIFA on Tuesday, he just went ahead and resigned that post, Hanzo. Any thoughts?
Oh, it's a weird decision, isn't it? You know, you've won the election and then you suddenly resign, you give up your power after all that effort. I feel like there's a lot more to be learned here in this story, actually, Stubbs. This is why it's even harder to speculate. The news is coming out about it so fast that you almost hesitate to say what they're going to come up with. It's clearly He knows the water's rising.
Well,
he doesn't have too far to go before something big's going to be discovered, or you know, if they don't have it already.
Yeah, the ship is definitely sinking. Yeah, and what happened between Friday and Tuesday, we won't know probably for some time. But I will say this: it's no coincidence that Blatter is being investigated by the FBI and by the U.S. prosecutors, and that the $10 million payment to a bank account controlled by Jack Warner was traced to Jerome Valcke, Blatter's closest advisor and confidant at FIFA. He's the highest ranking non-elected official in the organization, which basically means he's Blatter's guy. He wrote the check. It's pretty clear that came out Monday. Blatter resigns Tuesday. I'd be shocked if there wasn't some sort of connection there.
Yeah, I think it is only a matter of time. I think they're probably just building a case. The moment Blatter just saw that he wasn't going to get away with keeping his job anymore, and he wasn't going to get away with doing the things he's been doing for who knows how long. So, you know, change is coming. It's nice. Well, we hope it's coming to FIFA, and we'll just see. The fact that he's still sitting there, he is still acting as president right now, looking to, you know, make the changes for Nick by December or
And we will have a re-election, a special re-election here coming. It'll be interesting to see who runs. Will Luis Figo get back in the mix? Will the Prince get back in the mix? Who's going to do that? Will Michel Platini come in? You know, will he come in? It should be interesting. Speaking of UEFA, interesting news coming out amidst the scandal that a hefty sum of money was paid to the Irish FA over the World Cup qualifying handball incident against France with Thierry Henry back in 2009. It was a playoff game to go to the World Cup in South Africa. Yep. Thierry Henry, clear handball. Everybody could see it in the world. Yep. Thierry Henry admitted to it.
Yeah.
The Irish FA was prepared to take FIFA to court over the incident, in which they had grounds to take them to court. Sepp Blatter personally paid the Irish FA. What we're hearing is somewhere between the tune of 4 million and 5 million euros to be quiet and let it go away. This, to me, is absolutely shocking, Heinzen, that this would happen.
Yeah, it's really, really disappointing to hear that something like that can just go down and no one says it. You know, it just kind of gets swept under the floor with a couple of million dollars.
Well, and how about Jack Delaney from the Irish FA just takes the money and doesn't say anything?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. So I, Fran O'Brien, a guest of ours, former Irish international, I happened to be the first guy to let him know about that yesterday. And the look in his eyes, and the sheer anger, genuine anger in his eyes. The first thing he said to me, he said, Jack Delaney's going to get killed in Ireland. He said he's just going to get killed. He's got no chance. The Irish people will not be happy about this at all, because they have so much pride over their national team. They were in that World Cup. And this kept them out. And I think it's funny. I was talking to somebody this week, and they said it's interesting. Excuse me. Interesting to see the connection. Will be interesting to see the connection between the fact that one, it was France, and would Blatter rather have France than Ireland in because of ticket sales in the World Cup?
Right.
Also, Thierry Henry at the time, he was Adidas' most famous sponsored player.
Yeah.
Adidas also happens to be the main supporter and sponsor of the World Cup.
Right.
And my source is telling me it's not a coincidence that they were connected this incident. So I think the Ireland, this coming out about the Irish FA, I think this is a sign of what could come out. And I think what could come out could be really bad stuff we don't even want to know about.
Yeah, you could speculate, all kinds of stuff. And probably in some cases you would be pretty close to the truth. So we'll just see. I mean, it's going to be more and more discovery, and hopefully in the end it all comes down to they actually revamp a little more transparency inside of FIFA. Would be nice.
Yeah, well, it would be nice. And I think that there's, like we said, there's a lot to be coming out here, and it's certainly going to be interesting as to who gets thrown under the bus, who throws them under the bus, and what information we have.
Yeah.
But we can stop our speculation for now, Heinzo, and let's go to our legal analyst who we've got calling in. John Wilson, former Department of Justice employee, currently practicing sports law at K&L Gates here in Seattle. John, are you on the line with us here?
I am. Good morning, guys.
No, John isn't on the line with us, apparently.
Oh, no, John, we lost him.
We've lost John. We don't have John. We won't stream John in then. we're just going to keep talking about it. Yeah, John cannot hear us, apparently, so he's not going to call it. Let's just talk a little bit more about this. If you look at Jack Warner, and let's just talk Jack Warner, and let's just talk about him and what he's bringing to the table. He's saying right now he's gonna tell all, but he's also saying he's literally genuinely afraid for his life. I find this interesting.
Yeah, anytime you get that kind of money going, moving around, and people's obviously credibility, careers, and legacies are on the line with this, the kind of powerful people that are involved, you could be dealing with some really, really shady activities. Now, Jack Warner's hands aren't clean by any means, and who knows what he's got, what's swirling around in his mind, or what he's heard been said before about other people who might be stepping out to talk. So maybe his imagination's coming to life a little bit, or maybe not. Maybe a little bit of it is that kind of scary mob-style mentality, but you would hate to have that even come into the equation. Instead, it's one thing to have, horrible scandals and money involved, but anytime you go there, well, the next step is, how do we keep somebody quiet about all this?
Well, you
could go anywhere. So,
I think
trying to wind people up, or you could be actually legitimately thinking this could happen.
Well, and if you look at FIFA, they are being run like the mafia.
Yeah.
And so this wouldn't surprise me. I think that we may have John Wilson on the line with us. John, are you there?
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Nope.
Hello? Can you hear me?
No.
He's John, no? Not here. He's still not here. We're having some trouble. Well, if you just talk about it, with the mafia style. John, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I can.
Nope, we can't hear him. He's gone.
Can you hear me?
If you talk about the mafia style organization that they're running, and just all the money that's been transferred between organizations and everything else, this is what we're dealing with. This is what we're dealing with with this organization. Blatter is being investigated by the FBI. Mm-hmm. He is being investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice. And I think that like I said, I think that we're gonna get some bad stuff coming out of it.
Now my question is, obviously there's a lot of things coming out about the way things have been done in the past, which leads us up to the 2018-2022 World Cups. Do you think it's coming up, that's 3 years away. Do you think these World Cups will disappear? Do you think they'll revote? The 2022 one, do you think that's gonna come down to something like that, Stops?
It could. I think it's going to be tough for 2018.
2018, I agree. It's going to be tougher.
And I think it's going to be tough, I think, for, I don't know, Qatar, they're already working on it.
Yeah, they're already working on it. The deal's kind of been, you know, the deal's been done. The things have happened. But I think, for me, where I stand for this Qatar situation, was it the right thing to really bring it into the World Cup? Oh, do we have John now?
I'm not sure if we have John here.
Sorry. But anyways, to put it in the Middle East, I'm all for bringing it to other places. But this is a tough area of the world in the summertime. You have to change the whole schedule. And just the whole way the thing was done with this bribery, it just doesn't seem right. To me, it's got to be something that maybe they need to look at and redo.
Well, I agree.
And I understand that they've already built the stadiums and everything. But again, it's like one of those... How many of these stadiums are going to be used? You look at Brazil right now, dealing with all the stadiums that are not used anymore. Some of the most expensive stadiums in the world.
I agree. It's a situation where...
Sure, they've gotten it started, but why finish something that could be a disaster?
Well, I mean, if you look at the amount of people dying in building these stadiums in Qatar, they should sentence these FIFA officials to go and work on the stadiums. Here's your punishment. Go work on the stadiums. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Take your chances. Right now it's 40-60. They're going to go down.
Yeah. It's a pretty bleak thing. And it's definitely something that FIFA needs to really look at and quickly.
Yeah.
I know the investigation started, but obviously every day counts because every day they're working on the stadiums and every day is an argument to say, well, you know, we've got the stadium built right now. We might as well just keep going with it. So like you said, Russia, I think 2018, I think that's pretty much a done deal. It's pretty soon to have a turnaround for 3 years from now. But I mean, some countries can do it. The United States, England, you know, mostly in Europe. There's couples in South America could probably pull it off. But I don't know.
What happens if they take away 2022? Are we prepared to do it right away in the U.S. here, do you think?
I think that's a possibility. Yeah, absolutely. They could, but I mean, that's far enough away. Anybody can plan one with the right infrastructure. You know, you polish up a few things here and there, and you're good to go. We could do it in the United States. They could do it in Europe. They could do it in Australia. There's a number of countries that could host it. They could do it back in Asia again, I'm sure, no problem. You might even consider maybe China could do it.
Well, I mean, and here's the other question. Do they do a revote on this, or do they just say, hey, we're giving it to the U.S., or we're...
No, whatever. I think they say we're welcoming candidates in again. Qatar's willing to bid again for it.
Of course they are.
Even though, you know, I just think looking at the weather and the way it is, it's just to have it in a part of the world, unfortunately, that is so hot and so almost unplayable, you do have to change the schedule, which that isn't a big deal, but the fact that there was so much scandal around how they got the World Cup, it just doesn't seem right to host it there.
Yeah.
Not only that, it is a country that's been accused of human rights violations while building your stadium. And like you said, that's just absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
So, I mean, no sporting event is worth that, a bunch of people dying on a stadium. So I think that's just another example, kind of another stone in the well, or however you want to say it, that says, you know, this is not the way things should be done. This is not something that FIFA needs to have under their, you know, under their watch. So they got to look at a whole bunch of things. I mean, bribery scandals, stadiums, leaving countries with decaying buildings and all kinds of stuff. It's just not the way the game should be, you know, should be represented around the world. I mean, on one hand, they bring the game to everybody and it's fantastic experience for all people. And, you know, they build it and provides jobs and stuff. But on the other hand, you know, you got to take a look at all the spectrum. And a lot of people are in it just to make a lot of money.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly, well, we're finding out that's more prevalent now than we've ever known.
It's just the kind of leaves you a bad taste in your mouth. I mean, for all the good things it does, there's some serious issues.
There really are some serious issues. And like I said, I think that we're about to go into a situation where we start. I mean, these people are rolling. Everybody is pointing straight up.
Yeah.
They're pointing up the bladder. Everybody's right. I mean, it's a race to see who's going to roll first.
Right.
And like I said, I mean, this is years and years of abuse of power that we're dealing with.
Right.
And man, I'm just, I mean, part of me is afraid of what we're going to find out here. Part of me is just not looking forward to some of the things we're going to find out.
Right.
I mean, just hearing the Irish FA scandal, I mean, I think that's a small part of it.
Stuff that's been going on for a while. Yeah. You just never know. The thing is, finally Switzerland's getting this going after all this time of having them involved. You know, you've got this organization sitting in the middle of your country doing all these things around the world, and you know, Switzerland's not doing anything about it. So it's nice that they're finally going to be investigating the election process for both the 2018 and the 2022 World Cup. They're, you know, working with the United States to bring these guys in. It's about time that they finally stepped up. You know, it was the U.S. that started it out, had the investigation going, maybe lit some fires, but it's finally coming together. So it's good.
Well, it's
a good step forward.
Yeah,
step forward in the right direction.
Yeah, it is good. It is a step in the right direction. I agree, but it's still also just a bit disturbing. Yeah. I would say.
No, I totally agree.
I mean,
it is what it is.
I mean,
it is what it is at this point.
Yeah, really.
The rumors have only gotten, you know, the rumors have only gotten bigger and bigger before this all finally went down. So it was only a matter of time, I think, really. I mean, you could just see the trickle as soon as when Jack was busted for buying those votes, the Caribbean votes and stuff for the World Cup, and was kicked out, you know, had gotten in trouble for that or had that surrounding. You just knew the water was getting murkier and murkier. So.
Well, yeah, I know. And it really, I mean, it's been coming. I think a lot of people within the game knew something like this was coming, but I'm not sure we all knew it was going to be to this scale.
Right.
I think that we do finally have John Wilson, our legal analyst.
Oh,
John, are you there? Can you hear us?
I can. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can. Listen, sorry about the technical difficulties there. We've been, we've been talking about it, about the whole situation here, the scandal, Blatter resigning, the connection that we think there may be, you know, there with what came out about Jerome Valcke on Monday about the $10 million payment to Jack Warner and how that could be connected to Blatter. Where do you think we're at legally with this at this point, John?
Well, you know what, guys, it's absolutely fascinating to watch this thing unfold. It seems like every single day we're seeing a new development, and it's hard to keep up with all of the news. It's just cascading out. And, you know, that piece about the $10 million payment to some type of shell company that was controlled by Jack Warner is just, you know, one of the big pieces of news that came out this last week. You know, I think one of the most interesting things that came into the light this last week was the guilty plea of Chuck Blazer that was finally unsealed. And, you know, this is a court document that has essentially been under seal, hidden from the public since 2013. And, you know, they finally released it. And it's just absolutely illuminating to see some of the things that Chuck Blazer actually pled guilty to. To actually read in his own words there that he accepted bribes from bidders for the 1998 World Cup, for the 2010 World Cup, for all sorts of broadcasting rights. It's just been amazing to see this thing as it's unfolded at such a rapid pace.
Well, and let's just talk about Sepp Blatter. I mean, he goes from on Friday, he wins the election, and he's the quote-unquote president of everybody. And on Tuesday, he ceremoniously resigns. I mean... What do you think? I mean, do you think that he caught wind? I mean, we now know that officially the FBI and the U.S. prosecutors are investigating Blatter. Do you think that maybe this information was presented to him, or do you think that maybe Valcke is going to roll here?
You know, I think that there's a couple different options that could lead to the explanation as to why Blatter stepped down. But the first of all would be that he sort of saw the light, and the U.S. came to him and showed him a bunch of the evidence, or he's been in touch with his own legal advisors, and they said that he needs to prepare for a long legal fight because he's squarely in the crosshairs of the FBI and the Swiss authorities. So I think that could be one possibility. You know, he may have actually, reached some type of deal with either the U.S. or the Swiss that hasn't been made public yet. Or it could have been that the release of the letter describing the $10 million payment to Jack Warner that sort of tied to him through Jerome Valcke was sort of the final straw that led him to step down. So if I was a lawyer advising Sepp Blatter at this point, I would tell him that he has a long road ahead and lots of legal challenges coming his way.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Talk about a little bit about Jack Warner, because we just mentioned Jack Warner has come out and said he's going to start singing. I mean, he's going to start telling all. But he did come out and say that he's genuinely afraid for his life, which, I mean, it's unbelievable that we're even talking about this. I mean, this is like mafia style organization. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it really is. I mean, the more and more that we start to see just about how dirty and corrupt FIFA as an organization was from the highest levels, it really does resemble some type of organized crime family like the mafia. And, you know, those are the statutes that the U.S. actually has charged these defendants with, is these organized crime statutes like RICO, which you know, targets criminal conspiracies. And that's what they're saying happened here, was a group of individuals who sort of formed together to undertake a criminal purpose. And so to hear Jack Warner say that he's, you know, he's fearful for his life because of some of this information, it's just really startling, and it really speaks to just how sort of dirty and corrupt the organization has been. You know, from a legal perspective, we're starting to see indications that a lot of these defendants are going to start to roll, like you said. They're going to start to cooperate and testify. We've already seen Chuck Blazer plead guilty, and part of that deal was to cooperate with the authorities in their investigation. You know, there's reports that that even included recording conversations with other officials in the soccer world. You see Jack Warner, who said he's going to, you know, he has a mountain of evidence that exonerates him, and he's going to release that. There's rumors that Aaron Davidson from the Traffic Sports Group, he wants to plead guilty. He initially pled not guilty of his arraignment, but it looks like he may try to strike a deal as well. So one by one, we're starting to see these defendants kind of line up, and, you know, it won't surprise me at all if at the end of the day we see all or almost all of them accept, you know, some type of reduced sentence and plead guilty.
Fascinating. It's just fascinating. What's the next step? I mean, where are we at? Where are we going next with this? What can we expect next here?
Well, you know, we're still right in the heart of the extradition battle. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, and each of these defendants, I expect, will fight extradition. And so the U.S., working with the Swiss authorities, will have to, you know, tell the court there why these defendants should be extradited. And we talked last week about the extradition treaty between the U.S. and Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the next step. Honestly, one of the most interesting things for me as a lawyer just to think about is Chuck Blazer. And, you know, we've talked about him a lot. Obviously, he's sort of the star witness for the U.S. in this. And the interesting thing and somewhat sad thing about Mr. Blazer is that he's in very, very poor health right now. And in 2013, he was wheeled into the courthouse in a wheelchair when he pled guilty. Apparently, he's in a hospital right now in New York. And that complicates things, because if he passes away in the next year, 2 years, something like that, before, you know, we actually get to trial for any of these defendants, he will not obviously be able to testify against them. So if you're a government lawyer, how do you deal with the fact that your star witness is in such poor health that he may not even be able to make it to a trial in 12 months or 24 months or something like that? So, you know, for the government prosecutors who are working on this, that's something they have to think about, whether they try to take a deposition beforehand, you know, whether they try to get some video or recorded statements of Chuck Blazer, called perpetuation deposition, just to kind of perpetuate his testimony in the event he, you know, passes away. But, you know, it's very interesting to see what will happen with Chuck Blazer, because he's obviously right at the heart of it.
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, he is in bad shape. I mean, you know, word is he's got an advanced colon cancer. You know, he's been undergoing a lot of treatment. He's bound to not even a wheelchair. I think it's like a scooter. I think he's so big he can't even get into a wheelchair. I think he's got to be on a scooter, which is unbelievable. But yeah, it's fascinating, John. And we, you know, we sure appreciate you coming on again. And my thoughts are we're going to be talking to you every week here for the next month.
With the speed of the developments, it's just really amazing. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what the next day will come. Because every single day a new defendant is, you know, releasing new information, or, you know, something new is happening in this. So I think we're in for a long road ahead, and it'll be interesting to watch it all unfold.
Yeah, it's definitely. Well, listen, Thanks again for coming on. We know you're a busy man. You actually have another job aside from talking to us. So we really appreciate you coming on, and we'll make sure we'll probably be talking to you in about a week's time here, John.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Sorry for the
technical. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. That's good insight once again from our legal analyst, John Wilson. I mean, I think, you know, he's got a point. This is very difficult with Blazer. You know, he's the top witness. I mean, we don't even know how long he's going to live here.
Right. That definitely is. It's probably one of the reasons why they had to get going.
Yeah.
Get talking on it. So, yeah, it's great insight from John. Always nice to hear from him. Fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like I said, we'll be talking to him again next week.
Absolutely.
Because
as things continue to develop.
I'm sure something's gonna come out. Well, we're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinz in here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on every Friday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're on Blog Talk Radio and the Back Sports Page Network. Just going to give a shout out to La Rev.
All right, La Rev.
La Rev, our unofficial sponsor, Jasmine and Etta down there just serving out coffee every morning. Fantastic girls.
Thank you.
Thank you. Unofficial sponsor that. But we're going to move on here. We're going to move on here to the Women's World Cup. Starts tomorrow.
Big time.
What do we got our first game tomorrow?
Oh, it's going to be good. Canada, you know, the host. They're hosting China. China's been here for a while.
Yeah, we were watching China train.
They played the Seattle Rain earlier. Drew 1-1 with Seattle Rain. So China in the past have been strong. I'm not sure they are as strong this year, but this time around the World Cup. But obviously Canada, big time hosts. They got a strong team this year themselves. They're one of the sides, I think, picked to finish pretty high up semifinals. I mean, they're going to have a raucous crowd. It's going to be good.
So yeah.
It's going to be one of the tough teams for the United States. They're not in their group, but New Zealand and Holland on the other side. So
New Zealand and Holland on the other side.
Yeah. Okay. New Zealand and Holland on the other side. So it's going to be good. The U.S. is in the group of death. They have Australia and then obviously Sweden. Mm-hmm. And Nigeria, so yeah, they got a lot of tough.
Sweden, one of the favorites.
Yeah,
along with Germany.
Yeah, Germany's number one. Yeah. Team.
Japan is somebody to be mentioned.
Japan, absolutely.
And I would say France as well.
Yeah, and Japan actually, funny enough, have a player, Homari Sala. Did you know this is her sixth World Cup?
I mean, how do you play on that? That's 24 years of World Cup.
Unbelievable. Yeah, pretty impressive.
I mean, did she start when she was five?
I don't know, but I mean, it's 6 World Cups, that's unbelievable.
Well, let's talk, I mean, let's think about that. How's that possible?
Yeah, well, you know, she's fit player.
Well, it's 24 years. She's got to be in her 40s at this point.
Yeah, she definitely has to be. But, I mean, still fantastic. So, lots coming up. United States will play on Monday. It's going to be a great game.
And U.S. plays in their first game.
They will play Australia.
Yes, they will.
Yeah, indeed. So, it's going to be good luck to, we got two girls here, you know, Megan Rapinoe, and we got Hope Solo.
We're going to bring on Laura Harvey here in just a couple minutes to get her on and talk a little bit about those two and
your thoughts on how England will do.
Yeah, exactly.
They open up against France, obviously France being number 3.
Yeah, really looking forward to that.
So Mexico's in the World Cup as well. And obviously Brazil still have Marta. So it's going to be really good. Canada hosting everything. And it's going to be a fantastic, fantastic time. What's funny enough is, it's kind of a bummer that FIFA, all this scandal opens up right before the World Cup, the Women's World Cup going. So every time you say the FIFA World Cup, it just sounds a little bit, I don't know how many, you know, I don't think Sepp Blatter's even going to be able to go to the finals. It just, things look so bad for him right now.
Well, I know that if he steps foot in the U.S., he's going to have an issue.
Maybe if he gets to Canada. Yeah, I don't think he's, he originally was planning on going to the opening ceremonies, but now he's, I don't think he's going to be going at all.
So yeah, I don't think he's going to be going anywhere near the United States.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, but nonetheless, exciting times as things get kicked off. I think you have to look at, obviously, the top teams, Germany being the number one side, we're going to play Ivory Coast starting off. That's going to be, there's going to be a couple teams I think we're going to see, you know, as in any tournament, we'll move on really quickly. Germany being one of them, France being another. And the United States, obviously, against Australia, which will be a really tough match. Australia's got a great side. So 47 players coming out of the Women's Professional League in the United States playing in the World Cup. They're going to take a 12-day break here right after the rain. There's games tomorrow this weekend, and then they're going to take a 12-day break through the group stage.
Right.
Before they move on to the next things.
Right. And while we're waiting for Laura Harvey to come on here, I just want to talk a little bit about the U.S. goalkeeper, Hope Solo. Obviously, she's been in the news in the last 6 months for some, you know, for some reasons that we, you know, that aren't positive, a little domestic violence issue here in Seattle. Her husband, Jeremy Stevens, former NFL player, getting arrested with her in the U.S. national team van down in California. But she served her suspension. She's come back. And we've got an article on ESPN, Allison Glock. What a great article about Hope and Jeremy and kind of their journey in the last few months and what they're doing. And, you know, it sounds like Hope Solo is back with full force. It sounds like she's very focused, very at peace with herself. I mean, the reality is Hope Solo is still the best women's goalkeeper in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right?
No question. Best goalkeeper in the world. Best goalkeeper of all time. I think you could argue maybe Breanna Scurry would have a little bit of an argument with that, but I think Hope Solo's pretty. Breanna has won a World Cup. Hope has not.
True.
So there is that. And you know, Hope obviously has dominated that position for years now, but this is one for her that she knows she's focused on it. Her team's focused. They want to get it back. Everybody remembers that tough loss to Japan. So, I mean, especially playing this close to home, you know,
yeah,
right over the border. You know, Vancouver's only 3 hours away from Seattle, which is where she lives.
Right.
Some of her players play here. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge, huge opportunity. The final's going to be played July 5th in Vancouver at BC Place. So, big opportunity for the United States to come back and, you know, put themselves back on top.
And I think it would be great to see. I mean, I think obviously, well, I mean, I guess not for sure. Hope's 33. Mm-hmm. Is this her last World Cup?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, goalkeepers, you know, they go longer. So,
yeah.
I don't necessarily think so. She does have some injuries she's been dealing with for a while, so. Who knows?
Well,
I have no idea.
I mean, I certainly would like to see. I mean, what a shot at redemption that she has
exactly.
Here. You know, to come back and just have a great tournament. Another player looking. I mean, and this is definitely Abby Wambach's final final World Cup. And you know, with her, she hasn't won a World Cup, and she's had such a fantastic career and been such a great player for the U.S. Women's National Team.
Yeah.
I think it would be a great story to see her, you know, to win this as well.
Absolutely.
So
she just actually just had a goal voted best goal of all time in the Women's World Cup against Brazil in her header in 2008 in Germany. So
yeah,
another exciting honor in the whole list of honors for Abby Wambach.
Yeah, so. It's fantastic. It's you know, I think if you look at a couple other teams, though, I mean, if you look at Japan, obviously. They're coming back as the reigning champions, defeated the U.S. in the final. But you're also, you know, you're also talking about a player for them that played here in Seattle that we got a chance to see that is a very special player, Naho. The Japan Federation wouldn't allow her to come back for this season to play in Seattle because they wanted her preparing. They wanted her preparing for the World Cup there, obviously. But I mean, this girl is good.
Yeah,
she can play. Good. Very crafty, scored a ton of goals, and you know, she was she's a fantastic player. I think she's gonna be potentially one of the top players in this entire World Cup.
Right. And for those that don't, you know, this area as well, both Vancouver and Seattle and have a big a nice legacy Asian connection.
Yes.
So there's gonna be a ton of fans there. It's gonna be like kind of like playing a home match. It's almost well, not quite like playing in Japan, but pretty dang close.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have. I mean, they're playing all their games in Vancouver, aside from that third one in Ecuador or against Ecuador in Winnipeg. But
right.
Other than that, two games in Vancouver for Japan. It's gonna be like playing a home field match. They're gonna be a tough team to beat. So.
Well,
it's exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and from all you know, from everything that I've heard from sources that are familiar with. Kind of the Canadian Federation and their preparation for this World Cup, it sounds like they're going to put on an unbelievable first-class event, which you know, which will be nice, I think. And what a great opportunity for them to kind of showcase their country. I mean, who knows? We could be hosting 2022 Men's World Cup there instead of Qatar.
Yeah, who knows?
Gosh.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Well, we're still waiting for Laura Harvey here, and I know she's heading into the film room here pretty quickly, so hopefully we don't miss out on her, but we'll just keep trying to get her on here. Anything else on the Women's World Cup there from you, Harvey?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing how Canada looks. I think for me, they're one of those They do have the host advantage. They haven't been the talked about in the top tier group, but since they're hosting, they have a lot of great players. I think they're going to be the team to see at first, just to see how strong they are, what kind of representation they get from the home crowd. I expect them to be in the semifinals by the time this thing starts to wrap up. So, but I am looking forward to seeing them. Obviously, we've seen China train the last couple of weeks. They look like a pretty good side, but again, you just never know what kind of reaction you're going to get from Canada. So it's going to be an interesting round. And of course, you know, I'm excited for United States, Australia, Sweden. That also, that game between the United States and Sweden is going to be good. Former U.S. coach there with Sweden.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, and I think Brazil, obviously, in Group E is going to be somebody to keep an eye on. You know, and like we said, France in Group F going to be very, very difficult for them to deal with. Let's just talk about the a U.S. player that plays out of Seattle also, Megan Rapinoe. I kind of am looking at her to maybe have a, you know, she's been very good here in Seattle and very good for the national team the last 2 years. I'm looking at her to potentially have a breakout World Cup here because, you know, I think that she last World Cup she didn't have you know, she didn't have the chance to have that breakout, but in the form that I've seen her in and what, you know, in how this U.S. team looks, I'm really looking at her to hopefully break out here, and I think she's got a great chance to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is, and you've been hearing about it for the last couple of months, is how the World Cup was taken away from last time from that game against Japan, and there's no question everyone here is motivated to get it back. I mean, you can keep saying that again, like you said, Rapinoe had a game had a tournament that maybe wasn't what everybody expected from her this last time around, and everybody's got a chip in the game. So
yeah, exactly. Another
Alex Morgan.
Yeah, you know, two other players to talk about. Obviously, Sydney Leroux, Alex Morgan. You know, more of kind of the publicity. You know, the faces of the team in terms of commercially, but all very good players, dangerous players. Mm-hmm. You know, Alex Morgan is on the rise. She has been on the rise the last few years.
Right.
I think Sydney Leroux, you know, this might be one of her last chances at a World Cup. So mm-hmm. she's obviously got a lot to play for. I think you've got a lot of girls in this U.S. team who have been great players, who have had great careers, mm-hmm. who have done wonderful things, but they're missing that one piece. They haven't won that World Cup
for the 99.
Yeah, exactly. And when you think about the fact that this U.S. team hasn't won a World Cup since 1999, it is significant.
Yeah.
And I think the growth in the women's game worldwide over those last 16 years has been extraordinary. I mean, it's been big time how much the game has grown. In 99, we were by far the best.
Yeah,
and Michelle Akers looked like she was playing against youth players in that World Cup.
China definitely had a great team back then, but the United States, and that was a great game back at that time. But the U.S. definitely had, for quality, quality overall, fantastic.
Heads and tails above anybody else. Yeah, heads and tails above anybody else. So, you know, definitely I think that, you know, you've got a lot of players in this U.S. team who are looking at potentially their – you know, they're going to move out of that window to win this World Cup.
Right.
And I think that you're going to have them with a lot to play for. And I think that makes the U.S. very dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're going to move on here. If Laura Holly Harvey is able to call in, we will bring her back on, but let's move on and let's talk about, we are going to get Laura Harvey here. Just getting a little bit of a texture from her.
Okay.
So we'll stay on the women here just a little bit. One interesting story. Christy, who's now Christy Rampone, mm-hmm. Who was right. Christy Lilly, I believe she was playing in 99, was she not?
Back in 99.
Christy Lilly, let's do a little research on that.
Absolutely.
Can you check that for me, Heinzo?
You know, one of the absolutely. Another exciting player that I've enjoyed watching has come along. Heather O'Reilly is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Good midfielder, fantastic, great on the ball, and you know it's a good looking U.S. team. I think
Tobin Heath, another player, you know, plays in Portland with her club soccer, and you know, I think that she's another one that's going to have a good tournament.
Another veteran too, Shannon Box in the midfield.
Yeah,
so,
I mean the list is. I mean, you look at the U.S. team; they're strong. I mean, on paper, I mean, they're definitely a team that has to be in the conversation.
Right.
So are you going to watch the first You gonna watch the first game?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be fantastic stuff. So.
Right. Well, we're still waiting here on Laura Harvey. We've got contact, which is good. That means we're gonna get it. That means we could get her here.
We'll come back to her. We can talk about the other U.S. game. The U.S. game today.
Yeah.
The men's side.
Yeah, the men taking on Holland today. Brought in a pretty mixed lineup. The men did. In terms of, you know, young guys, old guys. Our Jordan Morris.
Jordan Morris not there.
No, he's been activated.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, he was activated just yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So he could potentially be in the mix. Seattle boy Jordan Morris.
The United States, though, have a great opportunity to show themselves and kind of prove things. The U.S. plays stops. The U.S. plays Holland. There's only one guy on that team from the last time they played Holland. They played him back in February 2010. Holland beat him 2-1. The United States has Michael Bradley. That's who, out of the 21 guys here on the list, Michael Bradley was the only one playing at that time. So, you know, it's a whole different cast. Brad Evans is there now. Evans is there. Clint Dempsey will not be there, expecting his fourth child, so he is not with the United States. I'm excited to see Bobby Wood, how he does, 1860 Munich striker, young guy. Jossie Zardes is going to be there. So it's going to be a good test for them. Miguel Ibarra actually is another interesting call. Minnesota United, last year's NASL Player of the Year. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. It's going to be a good test for this crew. Back line, I mean, Brad Guzan's back in the mix. Nick Raimondo, William Yarbrough, who you know from the Mexican League.
Yes, correct.
Back line, though, looking like John Brooks, Tim Chandler all together again. Michael Orozco could be in there. Breck Shea, possibility. DeAndre Yedlin's back there, of course.
Yeah,
DeAndre needs some games.
DeAndre Yedlin is in there, that's for sure.
Alvarado just won the Champions League with Club America.
So. Well, yeah, and I think Brad Guzan is an interesting one. He struggled at the end of the English season with Aston Villa. And I think this is his chance. I think Tim Howard could be on his way out of the national team situation.
I think Tim's almost done.
Yeah, and I think this is Brad Guzan's chance to kind of step in there and take hold of this role.
And I should mention that Brad Guzan actually was on that game on the team list against Holland, but he was an unused sub. Looking at the Dutch side, though, they've got four guys: Ron Vlaar, Gregory Vanderweel, Wesley Sneijder, and Klaas-Jan Huntelaar were all with the Dutch side back then in 2010. So. They're bringing back a little bit of experience. Of course, Robin Van Persie's in the lineup. A lot of PSV guys. They won the Eredivisie this year. Dali Blind's going to be in there. Stefan de Vrij from Lazio just qualified for the Champions League this last week. So a lot of great players are in the mix for the Dutch side. Obviously getting ready for a little European Championship qualifying. So it's going to be a good game, good test for the United States. Here's the issue, though, sometimes when you think about it. We look at some of the experience. Oh, do we have an option?
Yep, we've got Laura Harvey. And we've got Laura Harvey here. Laura, can you hear us?
Hi.
Laura, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
Listen, I just want to ask you a couple questions here, Laura, about just a couple of your players, obviously, coming into the World Cup, and then wanted to just touch basically on a couple of the teams and your thoughts on, what you thought the chances were. We're talking about Hope Solo here, and great article on ESPN.com the other day about her and kind of her rebirth. And, obviously you see her day in and day out, and it seems that she's very prepared for this World Cup. What are your thoughts on Hope and kind of what's gone on in the last few months with her?
She's always been a fantastic trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Always used the field as being where she can make her work. And I think the big thing for Hope is the most big players is that when big teams come around, they step up, and that's what makes them who they are. And she's no different. I think that's been a crucial to her going forward into the US team. I think they need their big players to step up.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were just saying that she's the best goalkeeper in the world, no question. And we're really looking forward to her having a great tournament. You know, just it would be great to see her have a great tournament. And we're huge Hope fans and really, really would like to see her. We were talking about Megan Rapinoe as well, a player that's done very well for you here in Seattle. What do you think about her and, you know, in what she could potentially do here in this World Cup? Yeah, well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing her because we've seen her play with you guys the last couple of years, and I think she's been fantastic for you guys. So I'm looking forward to seeing her do that on, you know, on this bigger stage with the World Cup. Talk a little bit about England and their chances, you think, in their group. They've obviously got a tough group, first game against France. You know, I know that you're very familiar with that English team. What do you think their chances are getting out of that group? Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit, you know, about the other teams. I mean, we talk about France. Obviously, Sweden is in the mix. Germany is in the mix. Japan. Any other surprise teams that you see coming in this World Cup?
I think the ones you mentioned are the ones that everybody thinks will be there or thereabouts at the end of the tournament. And the World Cup always brings a surprise. Maybe Canada, with it being at home, and the fact that they've done a lot of preparation over the last 6-7 months around what it's going to be like to host, what it's going to be like to deal with that pressure, what it's going to be like to be playing on the turf. And I think that's going to be a huge level of for some teams. I think for teams like Germany and Japan, they don't play on turf very often, and it's a big difference between playing on turf and grass. And I think it's going well for Sweden. The Swedish team, a lot of their kids playing first. The US, obviously, a lot of teams here playing first, and they're used to it. They don't necessarily like it, but they're used to it. And I think teams that can get used to playing on first quickly will find the tournament. You'll find structure in the tournament from that. I think that would be a big thing for the Germans, can they overcome playing on first? They're just going to do it. And if they can do that, they're going to get a better chance of being successful. I've got a chance to maybe second game, and I know that that would be
Yeah. What's your final four? What's your call? Who's your final four?
USA.
Ooh, there it is.
Nice. No Japan. No Japan.
I like it. I like it. Well, listen, Laura, we're going to let you go. I know you got to get to some film here. We certainly appreciate you calling in and certainly, you know, value your input on the Women's World Cup. And thanks so much and good luck tomorrow night. You guys have a big game against Sky Blue there. So good luck tomorrow night in the game with the Seattle Reign. Yep. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Laura.
No, that's great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, getting some reports that we couldn't hear very well, but
continue with the tech, you know, little technology issues.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah. Good old Blog Talk Radio.
That's fantastic, though, from Laura Harvey.
Oh,
that's
is fantastic. That is. Yeah. Just yeah, really good stuff. And you know, she left Japan out of her final four. What do you think about that, Heinzo?
No, I think that's actually. She's picked, you know, the best teams. I mean, the Sweden, France, Germany, that's ones everyone's talking about. Obviously, Japan coming in as the reigning champions. But as you know, from what we've seen from the last World Cup, that doesn't always happen like that.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Spain obviously going out. We've seen it before in the men's game. You know, it happens as well in the women's. So
very true.
Definitely a lot of the top players are currently France, Germany, USA, and Sweden. So yeah. It's fantastic stuff.
You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on every Friday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time, Blog Talk Radio, who we're not happy with right now, and the Back Sports Page Radio Network. We're going to move on here. We're going to talk Champions League final. How could we not? And it's just, we've got Messi. We've got Suarez. We've got Neymar. We've got Pirlo. We don't have Chiellini. Who's Suarez going to bite? We don't have Chiellini. What if he's hungry? What if he's hungry, Heinzo? What are we going to do?
I mean, this is a huge deal for me. I was really, really, really looking forward to a little Chiellini, Suarez, get into his head. What kind of drama? It's just another subplot in a whole list of subplots. But this was the biggest one, in my opinion. And he's gone. Obviously, we still have the benefit of having Patrice Evra there. Patrice Evra versus Luis Suarez. Delicious little matchup right there, but Chiellini right next to him would have been that much better, and they need all the psychological help they can get. Juventus, now who's going to replace him? Obviously, Bonucci was going to be there. Is it going to be Barzagli? Is it going to be Moroni? I think it's going to be Barzagli. Most likely, we see him slotted in when they went to the back five at the very end against Real Madrid, but Barzagli will probably be the most likely replacement. So I see the back line as Evra, Bonucci, Barzagli, Lichtsteiner, obviously Buffon. Buffon has never seen Messi before.
Really?
Yeah. Buffon has never won the Champions League. Yeah,
really?
It's going to be. But they have. He's won. You know, Italy won the World Cup in Berlin, 2006. So he's won there before. You've got a midfield that's going to be, you know, Rakitic, Busquets, Iniesta versus Vidal, Pogba, Marquisio, and Pirlo.
Well, and right around the 65th minute, they're going to bring in a very rested, fresh Xavi. And he'll start passing the ball at a 99% ratio around everybody.
And I think you'll see Juventus counter with, you know, the Perea possibility of trying to close those guys down. Don't give them a lot of time. They can't afford to have an open game like that. They'll absolutely be carved apart. But Juventus is an organized Max Allegri. His biggest deal is going to be his back line. He's a very, very organized coach. Defensively, Juventus are one of the stingiest teams you can have, you can meet up against. It's going to be a fantastic matchup, I think. The powerhouse, obviously everybody knows about Messi, Suarez, Neymar. It's going to be a really good three against a really good back four. It's just a shame Chiellini is involved. Buffon's got to have a big game. I think on the other end, you've got Morata, a former Real Madrid player. He knows Barcelona a bit, can be a nightmare, a big guy for Pique and Mascherano. Do they eliminate the attack from Dani Alves and Jordi Alba? It's going to be a great matchup for Marquisio, I think, against Dani Alves. I mean, these guys are – Juventus has a wonderful mix of youth and experience. And they have – you know, they've got a guy like Pirlo who can be on anywhere, find any angle on the field and play a ball somewhere. And at the same time, you've got Arturo Vidal and Paul Pogba who are so mobile and Marquisio. Mobile and working hard. Carlos Tevez against Mascherano. I mean, this is just full of great fabulous players and great, wonderful matchups, and I can't wait to see the game.
Oh, it's gonna be fantastic. And although Barca is favored,
yes, no question about it,
they are. Yeah, and I also believe that Barca will win, and we'll get to that in a second. This is a very good Juventus team.
It is a very good Juventus team.
They are underrated. Mm-hmm. Nobody's giving them a chance. And they're, I think in the back of my mind, I just feel like there's a chance they could do it. But I will say this. We all saw Messi's goal last week in the Copa del Rey.
It's extraordinary.
This man is dealing on a whole nother level right now that nobody can touch. Yeah. And when he's got the players around him that he does, combined with the form that he's found right now, I'm sorry. I just don't think there's anybody. And it's not a knock on Juventus or anybody. Chiellini, no Chiellini. This guy can't be stopped right now.
I know exactly what you're saying, and that is the card. I mean, but you've seen a Messi. You're right. And the form he's in right now, Barcelona will win. You know, it just is insane. That goal against Athletic Bilbao. And Athletic Bilbao is a good young side, and they know how to deal with Barcelona for the most part. When you see three defenders against Messi on the side, you think, oh, okay, he's not getting out of it. He gets out of it and then beats two more and scores at the near post, where you're like, well, okay, there's nothing we can do.
Unreal.
And everyone sees it and everyone knows it. So the way they're going to handle that is going to be fascinating, because you absolutely cannot be exposed. You can't let him have any space.
No.
We've seen Germany do it to him, but he's a different player than Argentina.
Yeah.
With Barcelona, he's with a crew that know him. He knows them. Very familiar. Danielle, doesn't he work so well on that side?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things is that you think about, okay, I had some people say, oh, well, he was playing Atletico Bilbao, whatever. Listen.
No, that's a good sign.
Remember when Jerome Boateng lost feeling in his legs momentarily and fell over against Bayern Munich? It's not like he's doing this against anybody. Yes, it doesn't matter who it is. No, this guy is just, he's at a whole different level. And I think it's going to be it's going to be unreal. One other thing I want to mention, though, Xavi's last game for Barcelona, you know, a guy that's been such a great player, but also such a good human being, and you know, very loyal to the club. There's a real big part of me that wants to see him win. But there's also a big part of me that wants to see the Italian Benjamin Button, also known as Pirlo.
Right. Would love to see him win.
I'd love to see that guy win it.
He's won it before, you know, won it with AC Milan, but still, it'd be great to see him go out like that.
Yeah, I think this is a different Pirlo and a different story where he's literally running this team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think Juventus is going to make this a very good game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, listen, if Messi gets on the ball in the right area of the field, in the right situation, he's going to create something. There's no way he won't.
Yeah, it's going to be – I mean, they're going to be on their toes. I mean, at Patrice Evra, this is his last chance for a Champions League. He won it, obviously, in 2008. He was in a final way back in 2003, I think, with Monaco playing against Porto, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, a lot of last chances for some of these guys. Well, probably first times for, you know, guys like Pogba, maybe Vidal. So, Morata for sure. Carlos Tevez, probably his last draw. I mean, here's another factor in there between Morata and Tevez. That matchup, like I said, against Mascherano and Piqué, it's going to be – Carlos Tevez is not a guy that lets you sit on the ball whatsoever, and I think Mascherano knows that. He's going to be letting – Piqué knows that. But he will hunt people down, and he works. And he's one of the reasons why I think Juventus are going to cause Barcelona some issues, because you do have those workhorses mixed in so well with quality. I mean, Morata sits, Tevez chases, Vidal chases, Marquisio chases, and then you have Pogba and Pirlo who do these things that most players don't.
Yeah.
It's a very, very – very, very fascinating midfield. And then in the other side, you have guys like Busquets and Iniesta and Rakitic who've now worked their way in and become a very fluid midfield three. So,
yeah.
Fantastic. Well, and then somebody wins the treble. Whoever wins, somebody's won.
Yeah, that's great point. Yeah. Somebody's winning a treble.
Somebody's winning a treble.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So. Which is really good. Well, you're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're going to move on here. We've got we're going to talk a little USL soccer and S2 here in Seattle, the Sounders reserve team hosting the Tulsa Roughnecks, excuse me, tonight down at Starfire Soccer Complex. We happen to have a couple of former Western Washington University stars, Oscar Jimenez, Gibson Bardsley, playing for the Tulsa Roughnecks. They are they're here. They're back in Seattle, and we welcome them back. And hey guys, Oscar or Gibson, do we have you guys on the line here? Oscar, Gibson, how are we doing? Welcome back to Seattle. That's good. You guys flew out early this morning or early yesterday morning? Yeah, that's a rough one. Well, really appreciate you guys coming on the show and looking forward to seeing the game tonight. I'm going to be there taking notes on both of you. You know, this the S2, the team you guys are playing against, obviously top of the league. You guys were one of the few teams to beat them with a 4-3 decision in Tulsa this year. What are you guys looking at as you come into this game tonight? And, you know, obviously tough match. They're undefeated at home coming into this game. What are you guys looking at? That's fantastic. Looking at your guys' group, obviously a new franchise, a lot to sort out there. As a group and moving forward with the season, what are you guys looking to accomplish as a group? And just to talk a little bit about Gibson, you know, last year you were over in Sweden making the transition back here to the United States. How's that been for you? Nice. Well, listen, guys, we got to get going here. We're a little late on the show. We had so much to talk about, but we sure appreciate having you guys on. We will be there tonight watching, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys before the game. Make sure you leave me a ticket, okay? Okay, cool, guys. Thanks, man. We'll see you soon. Leon, Oscar Jimenez and good old Gibson Bardsley there on. Not sure. Having a little trouble with the audio on our guests, but hopefully that came through. Let's
chance to watch you. It's good soccer.
Good level, yeah, good soccer. Good level,
fantastic play.
Yeah, let's just move on a little bit of MLS. We're just going to cover a little bit of MLS here. Last Sunday, we had two big Eastern Conference versus Western Conference matchups, and they didn't disappoint, really. Seattle Sounders here in Seattle defeated New York Red Bull 2-1 on an injury time winner from Clint Dempsey, Captain America.
They eventually gave it to Chad Barrett in the end, but it was, one.
Yeah, he was going in. I'm not giving that to Barrett. It's not Barrett's goal.
Yeah, he's right there tapping it. But
he almost put himself off sides doing it. I mean, how shocking about it? That was the one game. The other game over on the East Coast, LA Galaxy, New England Revolution. Actually, LA Galaxy up 2-1 in this game.
Yeah.
Revolution came back to tie it 2-2.
Yeah. Great for for goodness.
LA Galaxy, a little side note, they have not won a road game in 14 matches.
It's kind of surprising. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really shocking. I don't know about surprising. It's shocking.
Yeah, sloppy weather game, but yeah, to put in, I mean, you know, they're missing a lot of guys, so they're still having some injuries, but it's a great matchup. Good to see him getting goals. Teal Bunbury gets a goal. Giassi's artist, obviously, getting
another goal. Yeah.
Goal. Yeah, fantastic.
Well, and
he also got one.
Of course, Giassi's artist, he's with the U.S., obviously. Yep. Another big game for LA Galaxy, Vancouver coming to visit them. You basically have four of the top five teams in the Western Conference facing off this weekend. Seattle's at Sporting Kansas City. Vancouver is at LA Galaxy. Those are going to be big games. On Wednesday, we had two bottom of the table Eastern Conference team gain valuable points as Montreal continued their rise after their CONCACAF Champions League success with a two-on-win over Canadian rival Vancouver that we just talked about. Philadelphia on the rise big time, destroyed the Columbus Crew 3-0, and they're now sitting mid-table in the Eastern Conference. And we were talking about them as the worst team in the history of the MLS a couple weeks ago.
I know. The turnaround's been unbelievable. And Sebastian Letou just got his second goal. Remember him from the Seattle Sounders?
I do remember him.
Unfortunately, Columbus Crew goalkeeper in the second goal for Philadelphia was just awful. He changed his mind as he's throwing the ball out, fumbles it on the ground. Vincent Noguera just skips it over. It's one of those, if you want to see a cringing.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where you think to yourself, I've seen better hands on a clock. That's a rough one for him.
Yeah, it was, it was a good stuff.
Yeah, that is good stuff. Another big game going on this weekend. Toronto, who is on the rise, and they have some games in hand. They're going to visit top of the table DC United. DC United held Chicago Fire 3-1 on Wednesday to push their Eastern Conference lead to 7 points and put them in the overall points lead in the MLS over Seattle Sounders by 2 points. Big game for Toronto going there. Bradley out, obviously, he's with the national team. But let's talk about Giovinco, man. This guy is unreal.
Yeah,
I mean, the more I watch this guy, he's one of the top players in the MLS, no question in my mind.
Yeah, and he's got to be, you know, obviously, maybe he's a little inspired being a former Juventus player playing right now and watching his team go to the final, but looked lively from the start. Fantastic performance. Provides the assist on Morey's goal. Tore San Jose apart. They just did not look. San Jose actually dominated the game and were pushing forward, but then just the counterattacks, lightning quick strikes. Giovinco, clearly a big-time quality. Looks very, very good.
And his strike was a left-footed strike.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic stuff. Yeah, and he hits the crossbar again on one of his free kicks.
Yeah.
He's got fantastic.
I know. Yeah. He's a very fun player to watch, and I also have a special place in my heart for him because I think he's actually shorter than me. There's not a lot of men in the planet that I can say that aren't actually classified as midgets. So I do have a soft spot in my heart for this man.
Right.
And he is called the Atomic Ant.
Yeah, Atomic Ant. Yeah, that's right.
That's a great little nickname.
I do have to give a shout out real quick to Vancouver's Gershon Kofi goal of the year so far. Real Salt Lake.
Yes.
Last weekend, absolutely smashed it. Great goal. Vancouver gets the win there, but you know they're up and down right now.
Yeah, they are a little up and down. It'll be interesting to see how they continue through this. I mean, the table is tight still in the Western Conference. I mean, if you take away Seattle, between Vancouver and Real Salt Lake, and that's second to ninth place, we're talking 6 points.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seattle's only 3 points ahead of the Whitecaps, so they're not that far away. I think things for the East Conference, they can't let DC United get too far ahead of everybody else because it's getting pretty close. 7 points now DC United have. But as we've seen in MLS, things change so rapidly. Like we were talking about Philadelphia, who were looked like they were nowhere, are now sitting in the middle.
Right now, they're in the middle of the table. Yeah, it is.
There's plenty more room. Obviously, change is coming as well. New York City FC adding a player or two. LA Galaxy adding a player. Lots of injuries for some of these guys. So, lots of changes to come, no question about it.
Well,
Gold Cup as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the Gold Cup's going to put a twist into all of this because you're going to have teams, missing some big players. So, and not just to the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
You've got players from all over CONCACAF playing in the MLS. So you're gonna be missing quite a few players. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. You can catch us every Friday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific time on Blog Talk Radio and on the Back Sports Page Radio Network. We're going to move on to our final pieces, which, as you know, Heinzo, the final piece to the puzzle every week starts with your World 11.
World 11, Augustin Marchesin from Santos Laguna. Remember, if you listened last week, talked to Kim Tate of Santos.
Yeah.
They were up 5-0. Well, they lost the next leg 3-0.
We almost jinxed it.
Yeah, no.
We almost jinxed it.
3-0 at halftime for Querétaro, which, I mean, that is scary. But Augustin obviously allows 3 goals in the first half, but big time in the second half to keep his team and get the title. First goal, fantastic, actually, for them to get that title. Santos Laguna. So, anyway, Santos Laguna's keeper, big time. The back line, Dani Alves, first performance in the Copa del Rey. Extraordinary. Stefan de Bridge keeps Lazio, gets their last Champions League place. By the way, Rafael Benitez was supposed to keep Napoli in the Champions League, but instead loses 4-2 to Lazio and now moves to Real Madrid.
And he serves a mean steak tartare.
Lauren Koscielny from Arsenal. You saw that his performance. They were fabulous against Villa. Left back Serge Aurier of PSG. 2 assists from there. They win four big-time goals, win the French Cup title. In the midfield, Santi Cazorla of Arsenal. He was man of the match. In
that FA Cup final. Yeah, he was great.
Luis Gustavo won't be playing in the Copa America. Hurt his knee, but was fabulous for Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg, by the way, keep an eye on them for Champions League.
Yeah.
Sure, they are a very good team.
What a great German final.
Yeah. Great, fantastic play. The other side of that is Kevin De Bruyne, the Belgian. Amazing. Ever since he's come back from Chelsea, Wolfsburg looked like geniuses bringing him back.
Yeah, definitely.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic is the center man up top in the 4-3-3. 2 goals from the French Cup. Zlatan, what will he do next? We don't know.
I haven't heard anything. We haven't heard much about it.
Alexis Sanchez gets a goal against Villa. He was obviously been great all year for Arsenal.
Yeah, he has been very good.
And, of course, you got to have Messi. Talking about 2 goals in the Copa del Rey.
Who is that?
I don't know. Some guy named, you know.
He's some little guy?
Leslie Messi. Yeah.
Actually, he might be shorter than me as well.
Oh, yes, no question.
I love this. Yeah.
2 goals. Obviously, that one against the first one against the Copa del Rey was astounding.
Anyway, yeah. Astounding.
Yes. You have to go look at
his best goal ever, and that's saying something.
It's amazing. I can't believe you got out of it.
There's your World 11. You left off one important person on that World 11.
Who was it?
The manager,
of course. Scott Giddy Gibson, of course, of FTI, the most winningest coach in Seattle.
He's the most winningest coach in the history of world soccer.
History of world soccer, no question.
Nobody's won more games. Yeah, nobody's won more games. So, and nobody's bought more feasts after those wins.
Absolutely. Always great to have there.
Well, that's, as always, a great World 11. And as always, we're going to go from the positive right to the negative with my bottom three. Here's Stauber's bottom three for the week. And it's very rare that you get a repeat offender.
That is rare.
We've got a repeat offender, and it's unbelievable, this Jack Warner guy. I'm gonna talk to you about a couple things I found out about him this week. One, he's a former history teacher.
Oh, good. Right? Good for him.
Good soccer background, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he had a great one. Controversy seems to follow this guy. He's been accused of all sorts of improprieties inside and outside of football. He's rigged political elections in Trinidad and Tobago. He's withheld bonuses to Trinidad and Tobago national team players. He's resold tickets to the 2002 and 2006 World Cups on the black market. Here's the one thing I found out that I thought was the most shocking. He told David Beckham and Tony Blair, if you bring England to Trinidad and Tobago for a friendly, I will vote for England for the 2018 World Cup. They brought England. They played a friendly in the Port of Spain. Is it Port of Spain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which obviously Jack Warner profited off of.
Right.
And then he voted for Russia anyways. He's just, this guy's a good guy, good human.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this clown here in the next few weeks. But Jack Warner, number three. Number two is Martin Skrtel of Liverpool. Martin Skrtel seems to be, quote unquote, unhappy about the offer that he's received from Liverpool for his next contract. Apparently, Martin Skrtel hasn't watched any game tape of Liverpool playing in this last year because he was shocking.
Yeah.
The only thing he should be unhappy about is how he played this year. And for him to ask for a better contract and to be upset about it is shocking to me.
Yeah.
He's number two.
So do you think he'll stay at Liverpool?
I don't know, and quite frankly, I don't care. Actually, I do care. I hope he does.
Yeah.
Because it'll be worse if he's there. Number one on the list goes to Irish FA.
Yeah, that's got to be.
Delaney, accepting the bribe for the Henry handball.
Yeah, that's absolutely. You absolutely cannot. He's got no argument. And the fact that he's been thrown under the bus makes things right, you know? What else do you expect? How do you save face from this? You just don't.
Well, you don't save face if you're Ireland, because you just accepted it and walked away.
Yeah, right. Oh, and especially if you're Delaney.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I think he's going to have a rough one.
Yeah, I think he is. Well, he deserves it.
Yeah, he does deserve it.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to two touch. Last little bit here. You ready, Heinzo?
I'm ready.
U.S. Holland, who wins?
Holland wins. Oh, actually, I'm going to say it's a draw. I like the United States, but they have so many young players. Holland have a lot of experience. I'm going to say it's a draw, though.
Score?
2-2.
All right, there we go. New York Cosmos went to Cuba. First American sports teams to go there in a very long time.
Absolutely. A little history going over there. Cosmos getting a big win over Cuba. Cuba obviously getting ready for World Cup qualifying next week. For those of you that didn't know, it's actually happening already.
No, oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. Cosmos a 4-1 win over Cuba.
4-1 win, not looking good, Cuba. If you want to read a book, 31-0 is a great book. I cannot remember the author's name right now, but it's fabulous. Kind of talks about all the tiny teams and how early World Cup qualifying actually does start. And yeah, Montserrat's involved, Dominican Republic's involved, Canada's involved actually for, so it's all Asia and CONCACAF, North America area, Central America start qualifying. Anyway,
nice.
Cosmos, great. NASL, good team.
4-1 win. If you watch the game, the field was shocking.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Cuba, wonderful land.
It is a wonderful land.
People. Good to see him coming back out of all that. It is a fascinating little prism of history, which is...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to say the least, and it'd be interesting to see how Cuba does.
Yeah, absolutely.
James Milner looks like he's going to Liverpool. Thoughts?
Good piece of work there for Brendan Rodgers. I think James Milner will contribute, absolutely. Especially, you know, there's no Steven Gerrard, but he's a good hard worker.
I think him and Coutinho in the middle of the midfield would be good. Just as a side note, James Milner leaves Man City with three English born players now. Right. Only three.
Yeah.
Can you name them?
I can name Joe Hart, and I can name Frank Lampard's not there anymore. Are you counting
him? Nope. You can't name him.
Michael Richards.
You can't name them because they're in the reserves and they never play. That's why you can't name them.
Yeah, I was going to say, Matt, and that's all I know.
All right, moving on. US U-20s in the World Cup. They won 4-0 over New England. It was looking good on Tuesday. And then they lost 3-0 to Ukraine this morning. Yeah. Thoughts?
Nice that they got two wins. It wasn't a good result against Ukraine at all. Ukraine's been destroying everyone. So we'll see. You know, the United States still has a possibility. Argentina just got dumped out and they were the favorites.
Unbelievable. Not really good, though. Unreal. Not a good result at all. Looks like potentially Verratti to Real from PSG. What do you think about that?
Scary thought. It will be interesting to see if that happens or not. If he does, if Verratti goes, Rabiot stays, the young French midfielder. So it'll be interesting.
Well, I mean,
that's just another massive addition to an already crowded midfield.
Right.
I'm not sure for his career, that's the best move. He's better off doing well at a PSG or spending, but maybe that says PSG who's going to replace Verratti? That would be
big question. Let's stay on the transfer rumor bit here on Two Touch. Di Maria now looks like he's going to stay at United.
Yep.
He won't play, but he's going to stay there.
Yeah.
Nice place to hang out, apparently.
Yeah,
Carrington Road, training ground, you know, Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
Nice place. So he'll be there, but maybe he might be joined by Karim Benzema. It sounds like he might be coming from Real Madrid.
Yeah, Benzema, Ferguson tried to get him years ago, and he's at Lyon.
Mm.
I can see it happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last little bit of transfer rumor. A man we've talked about already, Carlos Tevez to Atletico, is what I'm hearing.
Could see it happening. Yeah. Why not? Diego Simeone, get back in there with the Argentine man. I could definitely see it happening. Tevez and Torres. Absolutely.
Because it looks like they'll lose Griezmann.
Yeah. I think so. I think Griezmann's going to lose.
Griezmann, yeah. I think they're going to lose him. Last but not least, Carlo Ancelotti has been replaced by a fat Spanish waiter at Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. AC Milan, his old club where arguably he found his most success,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And really had a love affair with the club.
Oh, yeah. There's a player there and everything.
They were doing everything to bring him in. He just turned him down, flat up.
Yeah.
Says he's going to take some time off, back surgery, and then he wants to return to the Premier League. Surprised?
I guess I am surprised a little bit. Like you said, he is, you know, that was – he loves that club, loves the area, but lots of changes at AC Milan now. So, you know, new ownership perhaps in the making. AC Milan have never looked worse. Well, they have, but they're really in trouble right now. I think maybe for Ancelotti is something he just doesn't want to deal with right now. He obviously knows more about what's going on inside in the front office. And
yeah.
I think what he thinks and where he's at in his career right now, it just isn't for him.
Well, and when you talk about the front office and AC Milan and Italian football, and then we've already been talking about
all the troubles he's had.
We've been talking about the mafia. I mean, when you want to talk mafia, you can talk AC Milan and any Italian football.
They are in need of a new manager, though. You know, people in Zaghi is out.
Yeah. Well, maybe Scott Gibby Gibson is on the list, the short list.
He might be.
He is the all-time leader in world football and wins. All right, well. Great show. Thanks to all of our guests. Fantastic to have them on. And just a lot going on in the world of soccer. Don't miss us next Friday. Sure to be another great show. For Aaron Heinzen.
Oh, yeah.
This is Todd Stauber. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the games. You're going to have some good ones starting today with the U.S. Holland, going into tomorrow with the Champions League final, and going on through all of the Women's World Cup. Enjoy the games. We'll talk to you next week.